Redacted Media and GhostHat.net present The Film Illogical Society. On today's episode, we continue our countdown of the BBC's 100 Greatest Comedies of All Time. And now, here are your hosts, Chris Scholes and Chad Halverson.
And welcome to our show. This show, which is The Film Illogical Society, the countdown show, where we are counting down the top 100, that's right, the top 100 films of all time in the comedy genre, according to the BBC, the ultimate in lists. With me, as always, is my sidekick, my other half, my Chad.
You're hanging, Chad. You're pregnant,
no,
Chad.
No, let's keep the humor topical, please.
Oh, sorry. No dated 2000 jokes.
No. Okay. No. Please. our audience. We're going after millennials.
I was gonna say, we're going after those darn millennials.
Yep. That's our future. If we don't capture those millennials, we're not going to succeed as a podcast.
Technically, I'm a millennial. I'm a very old millennial, but I am technically one.
And do you listen to our show?
Yeah, and I also ruin restaurants and buying cars and buying homes, so you're welcome.
All right. We are successful. That's what I like to hear. All right. Well, if you'd like to introduce yourself further.
Oh, hi, I'm Chad. I watch movies, and I like hanging out with Chris.
Even if it's a virtual hangout.
Yeah, literally a hangout on Google. Because Facebook doesn't work for some reason between us.
Literally a virtual hangout between
us. Yes.
Yes.
I'm going off topic, but how was your holiday?
It was good. Considering this will come out, my MLK Day was great. we had off. The school was closed, so we all stayed home. It was very relaxing. How was your MLK Day?
I think I went skiing. I think.
Nice.
I don't know, but I might have.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm still working with past Chad on that.
Okay. Yeah, sometimes, you know, figuring out between what's going on with past Chad and future Chad and present Chad, it's just a mess. Yeah. All right, so this week's movie is a premiere film for Val Kilmer. His first credit on IMDb, and this is, I mean, it's impressive. The movie is Top Secret. It is a 1984 film. It is brought to you by the group that we are going to see a lot of, the Zucker Brothers and Abrams.
Yeah, for good reasons.
Yep, Jim Abrams, David Zucker, and who's the other Zucker?
Mark Zuckerberg?
Jerry.
Oh, yeah.
David, Jerry, and Jim.
I know they all grew up not too far from where I'm at in Whitefish Bay.
Yes. Yeah, they grew up. They're all from the Milwaukee area in Wisconsin.
Yep.
Which, for those of you across the world, if you know where Chicago is, it's north of Chicago. If you don't know where Chicago is, it's between New York and Los Angeles.
Yeah, so literally
that's
between.
That's where Wisconsin is. That's where these guys grew up. And so we will, this is our first film with them, and we'll definitely talk about them coming up. But this is a Val Kilmer is in this. You also have Peter Cushing.
Yeah.
In a surprise role, and we'll talk specifically about him and his scene. And then we also have Michael Gough, who also starred with Val Kilmer in a movie called Batman Forever.
Yeah, yes he did. He was Alfred for four movies.
Yeah. We also have acclaimed actor Omar Sharif. He is also in this film. The rest of the cast, you're looking at some, you know, maybe some people that did things in the 80s and things, but no real names. I mean, Val Kilmer's a name. It's impressive that this is his first film.
Because
he's starring. I mean, he's the main actor in it, and it's his very first film.
I guess I didn't look at the IMDb before we started, obviously, but I didn't realize this was his first film. Like, I would assume that he was one of those child actors that probably did a bunch of small stuff. But yeah, if you go on IMDb, it's literally the first thing there. 1984, the year I was born. You're welcome.
That's pretty impressive for any actor to just start off on their own, you know, like headlining their own film.
It makes sense, though, because he's always been a musician. And this was, you know, I mean, singing and dancing and performing, so.
Yep. Well, yeah, but still, I mean, there are other actors, you know, like, he would have been probably a little old for the role, but, like, even, like, a John Travolta could sing and dance and, you know, like, he could, you know, you could have cast somebody, a name that was known to draw people in. But before we get too far, Chad, would you mind telling our audience what this film was about?
Okay, so I feel like I got to explain what a Zucker movie or a Zucker Abrams movie always entails. Like, they're somewhat cohesive stories, but their jokes are very, they do a lot of puns, they do a lot of play on words, and a lot of just, like, random stuff. But the beginning of this movie opens up with a song called Skeet Surfin', and it's just a bunch of people, it's a riff on a Beach Boys song, and it's just a bunch of people surfing and shooting guns in the air.
Shooting at
clay pigeons, yes.
So, skeet shooting.
Skeet shooting, yes. So, and then we cut to Nick Rivers, our main character, and his agent, and they're traveling on a train to East Germany, which we know back in the day, East Germany. Well, I guess in the movie here, it's kind of weird because it's not true East Germany like what it was in 1984, because they kind of gave it more of a Hitler-y Third Reich vibe in it. It seemed like it was more of like an exaggeration of what East Germany was in 1984. But anyways, back in the day, there was West Germany and East Germany after World War II, because the Soviets and the Americans and everybody was fighting. Nobody cared about anybody. So Nick is traveling to East Germany, and he's supposed to perform a concert. He goes to dinner, and he encounters a woman who seems like she's in trouble. He helps her out. Another dance number ensues, and she ends up leaving. And then, let's see. Yeah, okay, so then we cut later to Nick's at a ballet, and he sees this woman, Hillary, again, and she's in trouble. She's being held up. So he goes over there, takes care of the situation, and now they're on the run. He ends up getting captured, where he's questioned and tortured. He tries to escape a room, which leads to a good physical comedy slash visual bit, where he tries to, like, you know, it's like the Scooby-Doo gag where they go into one door and then they come out the opposite door on the other end of the hallway. And he keeps doing that. And then he ends up finding Dr. Paul Flamin, which that's not... sorry, I'm just trying to get... That's not Peter Cushing's character. That's Michael Goh.
That's Michael Goh.
Yeah. Michael Goh's character is this professor. He's supposed to be building this naval mine that's going to destroy the entire NATO submarine fleet. Because there's supposed to be this big convergence of NATO in the East German area around that time. And they're going to trick them. And they're going to create havoc and chaos and blah, blah, blah. So Nick gets caught again. He's scheduled for execution, and then right at the last minute, the call from the mayor comes in saying, "Hey, this is going to be an international incident if we kill an American, blah 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 blah." So he has to perform tonight. So,
well, a famous American. If we kill a famous American, it's going to be an incident.
Exactly. So he ends up playing the show. They show a couple more songs. I think it's two songs. And again, this whole movie, like, his character is basically like if the Beach Boys and Elvis were one. Like, he's good looking. He does the hip shakes. He does the, calling out the girl from the audience.
The
and
gyrations.
Singing. Yeah. The stuff that your mama told you you shouldn't look at.
Get all the girls flustered, and some of the guys too.
Yeah.
So while you're describing it, I just want to ask you a question. Would you consider this movie a musical? Now let me define a little bit. So now there's musicals, and then there's movies with songs. So musicals, the songs help pull the plot forward. Like the songs often share a thought or are necessary in order for the movie to continue, versus movies with songs, which are just kind of asides, but they have nothing to do with the plot, or they really aren't pulling the movie forward. And I will, the last song that he sings, so he has to sing one song closer to the end of the film, and I know you're not here yet, but I'm interrupting you anyway, where the French Resistance says, you need to prove that you're not a spy by singing a song. And if he doesn't sing the song, the movie's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
So, with that one song, I would say that this film would be a borderline musical. Like, on the side of musical. What do you say, Mr. Chad?
I would agree with your assessment. Like, it
hot take.
Yeah, it's a musical. Like, it's not a musical in the vein of, Pretty with a Fringe Grease on Top, or Bye Bye or Birdie Grease, or anything. But you're right. There's a major difference between having music in a film that, fills space and has a purpose, but it's a completely different thing where in the world of the film, you have people or a person breaking out into song to help further the plot. So, yeah, I would agree with you.
So this is, officially then, our first musical comedy.
Not true.
Wait, what other musical comedy we have?
South Park.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You can't argue that. That is definitely a musical. But
this is our first musical comedy with Val Kilmer.
Oh man, you're so good. You're so smart.
There.
You're so smart.
Woo. So, all right. So anyway.
So Chris buried the lead. Yes. But so Hillary shows up and saves Nick Rivers from the show. They go on the lam, and they join up with the French Resistance. She also meets up with her old flame.
Excuse me, you missed the part where they made whoopee together.
Oh, sorry, they had sex in front of two separate fireplaces. That was, and I'm going to stop here, but like that was a typical Zucker Abrams moment where they pan over to them like, or they have a shot on them, like, kissing and starting to, like, go further down and, get real serious. And they're not going to show it. So the camera pans to the right, And then they get in front of that, like it's a shot of a fireplace, and then they move in front of that, so the camera pans again to a different fireplace, and then the scene ends. And I just, it's little stuff like that that always make Abram Zucker movies really good, like Police Squad or Hot Shots. You name a movie that they've made, they're all relatively the same with that like visual style of humor. Anyways. Yep. So yeah, the next day, meet up with French Resistance, and they meet up with Nigel the Torch, who was a fling of Hillary's back when they were both stranded on an island together as young teenagers.
In the Blue Lagoon.
Yeah, in Blue Lagoon. Oh man, that's what that reference was. I've never seen Blue Lagoon, but that totally makes more sense now. So at that point, you know, Hillary is conflicted because she likes Nick, but also Nigel was her first lover and blah, blah, blah. Nigel has a plan to rescue Dr. Flamin and, you know, make sure everything stops with the mine and everything. So they come up with a plan, and then East German soldiers find them, and there's this long drawn out shootout with so many visual gags. You really just have to watch it to get, but like, and they've done this gag before where like, remember in Police Squad where Drebin is having a shootout with somebody at the dock and they're firing back and forth and the camera cuts back to one and the other, and they keep moving forward until finally they cut to a wide where they're literally at two boxes next to each other, firing a gun at each other and they're missing. Like it's kind of ridiculous like that. There's just have you seen that movie?
Yeah.
Just the whole fight scene in general is just crazy, stupid, funny. After that, they get back to where Nick was being held, the prison. Nigel and one of the other members dress up as a cow to get into the compound because there's soldiers are farming cows, and they shut off the gate or the electrified gate so everybody can get in. They infiltrate the prison. Nigel ends up being the traitor, which you know right away because he just acts like a complete dick throughout the entire movie.
I mean, his name is Nigel.
It is Nigel. He does a heel turn and they get Dr. Flamin, but Nigel takes Hillary. So then Nick chases after them, and then the movie essentially ends with a bar fight, like in a you know, at the OK Corral, but it's all underwater, like all of it. It's really cool because I can see where, like, okay, they're cutting here so the actors can breathe and blah blah blah, but it cuts really well together. Nick beats Nigel.
And just to elaborate on that bar fight, and that is a scene to watch because it is so well cut, but they're fighting underwater, throwing punches at each other, and as you can imagine, being underwater, those punches aren't really coming that fast.
No.
But then there's a table full of cowboys playing poker.
And they get bumped into, and the table falls over.
They get bumped into, and then, yeah, the bartender, like, crashes a beer bottle on top of Nigel's head. And
again, it's all standard stuff, but because it's underwater, it's completely different. I would have had more fun shooting a scene like that underwater for a week than anything I've probably ever done in my life. But anyways, so yeah, after he defeats Nigel, the Resistance meets up, and, you know, Hillary was going to be like, no, I need to stay here, and her father and Nick kind of convince her to go back home to America, or go to America, and everything will be great in America, yes? And then it just ends there. Like, this is the only problem I have with this movie. Like, the ending felt very, like, you have the fist fight, and then a minute and a half of resolution, and then it's the end.
Yeah, I'm sure they're like, well, I guess that's it.
That we got no more story to tell. But yeah, that's essentially the movie.
So there's a couple of things, you know. So we talked about Val Kilmer, this being his first. So what do you think of Val Kilmer? Like, what are your when you hear about Val Kilmer? Like, what do you associate with him?
whenever I think of Val Kilmer, it's always because the first thing I ever saw him in was Top Gun, so I always think of Iceman. But he always has confidence. He's got, you know, good looking hair, a rigid jawline. Man, I really like Val Kilmer.
Val, so Top Gun came out 2 years later. Mm-hmm. So it was his third theatrical film, was Top Gun. That is fairly amazing, if you ask me. I mean, if you look at this guy's career, Top Gun, Real Genius, Top Secret,
Willow,
The Doors. Like, those are all within his
Tombstone.
First 10 films.
Man, Tombstone's great.
Yeah, Tombstone is really good. I mean, and then Batman Forever. So he did not have many films. I mean, he ruled the late 80s. The mid to late 80s, like, he was a top actor. And he literally came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, I'm, you know, when I was looking at this film and looking up his, you know, his work, you know, you expect there to be some, you know, some movies where he's got a bit role, right? Where, you know, maybe it's like a waiter, like Harrison Ford's first film, he's a waiter.
Yeah.
You know, and he doesn't have much of a line or anything. He just kind of walks in and then he walks out. That's typical of most Hollywood actors and things that they kind of build up their careers. Val Kilmer, right away. But then he's kind of, you know, he's kind of had a little falling off.
He had, and I'm trying to look up the specific information right now just so I don't say anything wrong, but I'm pretty sure he had throat cancer, or at least some sort of cancer. Sorry, just give me a sec.
Click, 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 click. Sorry, I was badly trying to cover up there.
Yeah, so in 2015, he was rushed to the hospital, and yeah, he ended up getting cancer. And I recently saw a movie with him, and I would not see this movie because it's fucking garbage. But The Snowman. It was the thriller with Magneto, new sexy Magneto. Come on, Chris.
No, now I'm just picturing sexy Magneto.
Yeah, younger sexy Magneto.
Michael Fassbender.
Thank you. Yeah, it's with Michael Fassbender. But Val Kilmer plays this detective in it, and when I watched it the first time, like, his performance was weird. Like, I thought something was off, and I thought it was like a weird choice from the director, but it ended up being like, no, like, he has throat cancer and he's had surgery and he's pretty much lost most of his voice. And I ended up finding an interview a couple days later. Like, he's a big musician and loves to sing and loves to do that, but he really can't do that anymore because of the cancer. And I'm not sure if it's in remission or where he's at with it, but it definitely has affected him. He's supposed to be in the new the Top Gun movie that's filming.
Yeah, I heard that. Reprising his role as Iceman.
They're calling it Top Gun Maverick. Like, how lazy is that title?
True.
Anyways, yeah, I
always saw his career and right or wrong, and I don't know if this is the dude that they're in a movie together, but I always kind of saw him and Marlon Brando. I'm not putting him at the level that Marlon Brando was at, because I think when you look at Marlon Brando's career, you're looking at one of the top actors in the different genres that he was in, but just kind of career, because he kind of came out of nowhere like Marlon Brando did. And he was a face, he had talent, he was doing all these films. Like Marlon Brando, they both had massive weight gains later in their life. And then now he's kind of coming back again. Like, his career is coming back again, a lot like Marlon Brando did when his last films were The Godfather. I don't know if that holds up or not, but like in my head as I was growing up and seeing him and kind of seeing the trajectory of his career, that connection for whatever reason always rung true in my head.
Yeah, I there's certain actors that kind of like, and yeah, you know, he definitely had peaked in the 80s, and I mean, he had a good career in the 90s though too. Like it was probably early 2000 where he kind of fell off for a bit, but he had Kiss Kiss Bang Bang in 2005, yeah. And he's always kind of like come back here and there with either he's done, you know, he's starred in movies or he's done a cameo. But I mean,
MacGruber, he was in MacGruber. Yeah. He has a number of films that he's in, so he's still an active actor, whether he is having different cameos or looks like he's playing Mark Twain in a number of films. It looks like it's like a comedy where he's just playing a role where he's Mark Twain, and they're doing a number of things for like Cinema Twain. So he's definitely an active career, and I'm guessing that he has recovered enough that he can still do things.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I just found it really interesting that this was his first film, and he's starring. So let's talk a little bit, and we will get into, because we do have a couple more films with Abrams and the Zucker brothers. But they grew up, and they to me are in a very select group who know how to do parodies, who know how to do spoofs. Mm-hmm. You can put Mel Brooks in this. You can put Edgar Wright in this.
So you better put Edgar Wright on that list.
Yeah. I think they're a very small group that they know how to do spoofs. I think one of the Zuckers at least was associated with the Scary Movies.
Yeah.
Which I don't think are, I think those are kind of more on the bad side.
The first one or two were all right, and then when they franchised them out, like all good horror movies, then it started getting ridiculous. But yeah.
Yeah, so to me, a good parody, and we have a number of these on our list, so we're going to get to them. A good parody, a good spoof, are films that have their entire story, and they don't spoof a specific film, but they spoof a genre. So you could look at and say, oh, Spaceballs, that's a spoof of Star Wars, mm-hmm. for Mel Brooks. But I would push back and say, no, I think it's more than just Star Wars that they're spoofing. They're spoofing kind of the space fantasy, because there's Star Trek references in there. There's Buck Rogers. Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of different references in there. And I would say the same. So this is more of a spy genre.
Yeah.
The war spy genre. So you have your typical, spy, and then you have also this fish out of water character with this American Nick Rivers, who actually is like a James Bond type, because he kind of takes lead with Nigel of the Resistance. And and I think when we get into Airplane and the Naked Gun film that's on the list, and then obviously the Mel Brooks films, we can talk definitely more about spoofs and parodies done right. Mm-hmm. I am always, I don't know, just growing up when I did, in the area that I did, in the Milwaukee area, like the Zucker brothers and the Abrams, like you knew it was going to be good.
Yeah.
Like, you knew it was going to be a funny film. And there, I don't know how you direct a film, how three people can direct a film.
Yeah, I feel like at that point, it's like, well, were all of you really directing at the same time? It was like one person working on, you know, actor performance and was one person working on, you know, blocking. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, when you start getting too many director cooks in the kitchen, it gets a little confusing. But they've always made it work.
Well, they grew up together.
Yeah, they know each other.
They know each other, so they could work with each other. I think if you threw three directors that didn't have that history, it's not going to work.
No way.
Yeah, because they got their start. I don't know. Have you seen the film, the Kentucky Fried movie?
A long time ago in film school.
Yeah. So the Kentucky Fried movie was their first film that they wrote. All three of them wrote. And it's a bunch of short vignettes or short films that are kind of mashed together into a film. There's a central movie that is maybe 45 minutes in the middle. But for the most part, it's like a longer Saturday Night Live, you could say, where you have just a bunch of different short bits. I'm trying to remember some of the bits that they had, like there's a bit where there's like a documentary about harvesting the oil off of teenagers' faces as a fuel substitute. What else was there? Catholic school girls in trouble. Their main film was a kung fu parody called A Fistful of Yen. They introduced a new movie experience. So this was the time when, like, 3D... So this movie came out in 1977, so 3D was a thing then, wearing the old green and red glasses. But they had Feel Around, where... They had a person in the theater who would feel you as the movie was going on. So you would experience, like, if the actors were touching each other and stuff like that. It was, you know, it's a funny film to watch. It's not on this list, but you can see where they got their start. You can see where you know, I look at my friends that I grew up in high school with. If we all sat and just kind of tried to write a film, this is what it would be. Because we wouldn't be able to write a full 90-minute film. We would write a 5-minute film, a 10-minute film, you know, all these shorts. And then just say, oh, I guess we'll just put them all together.
My wife loves this movie. Like, absolutely loves this movie. It was funny because I watched it over 2 days right after the holiday, after MLK. And
that was yesterday, you know.
Yeah, I know. But she brought work home and she's like, I'm just going to, you know, we're going to hang out and I'm going to watch this. And, you know, well, okay, I'm going to work and, you know, whatever. Within 2 seconds of starting the movie, she just dropped papers and watched the movie. She just, both times too. Like, got no work done. She's singing along to all the songs. And my wife, you know, she likes movies and stuff, not to the level where I'm at. So it's always nice to find a movie that she's more excited about than I am, because I'm excited about, like, all the movies. You know what I mean?
Right.
And, you know, she's like, eh. But this movie, I mean, I watched it for the first time with her 2 years ago. And I don't know, the second time through, I definitely liked it a lot more.
Sorry, we both have young children.
Yeah, sorry, we're both super tired. It's weird because considering how tight of a movie Airplane is, I don't know. This is at least my opinion. I feel like this movie isn't as good. Like, I don't think the jokes are as good. And I think some of the storytelling is, I don't know, like, it's a parody, but it still has to make sense. And there's a couple points where it just doesn't. But you can see a lot of their running gag lines in this movie that, you know, some bits that they kind of did in Airplane, and then you can kind of see some stuff that's going to come up in the future with Police Squad and stuff like that. So overall, I give it a solid B plus. Like, it's definitely not my favorite Zsasz movie.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, no, thank Wikipedia for that.
Thanks, Wikipedia, for that.
But yeah, it's good. I definitely, right away, I was like, man, I want to watch Airplane now, just because that movie to me is,
that's their best film, I think.
Yeah, and as much as I like basketball and, you know, Hot Shots, man, I love Hot Shots.
I can't believe you brought basketball.
Dude, why isn't basketball on this list? That movie is great.
We'll get there on another show.
Sure.
Well, we're going to have a follow-up show to why wasn't this on the list, where we watch all the other comedies we can
another think of. 500 episodes.
Right. All right, so there's one scene, and I feel that this film is it's number 82 on this list. And I think the reason that it's this high is one scene in particular. So you know, throughout the film, they're in Europe, so there's a lot of foreign languages being spoken, and a lot of them are just fake or different phrases that don't mean what they're supposed to mean. But there's one scene in particular where they go to, I think it's a Swedish bookstore.
Yep.
And this is the scene with Peter Cushing in it. And you may know Peter Cushing. He was in the original Star Wars film. He was the, who was he?
Governor Tarkin. Grand Moff Tarkin.
Governor Tarkin. Yep. Basically the main bad guy, you know, Darth Vader's boss in the first Star Wars film.
As if Vader needed a boss.
He always had a boss. Till he quit in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, he quit with a vengeance.
Anyway, this scene, and I will try to put a link to this scene.
Yeah, because it's,
If I remember, I'll put a link to this scene in the description. But it was, basically filmed, and everyone did all their actions backwards. They spoke regularly and all that, but they did everything backwards. So when they reversed the film,
played it forward,
then they were able to do so many interesting gags. And the language, you know, the spoken word, it sounds foreign now because everything's backwards. It was so well done. I can't imagine that anyone. I don't remember a scene like that, you know, in any film prior to that. I'm sure people have done something like
it's
that, or
very
or
rare.
Maybe shorter.
A lot of times, it's just certain like insert shots, like back in the day before special effects, especially like in talkies and stuff, if you wanted to show an action of something moving, but like the only way to do it is to reverse the action and then play it forward, like they're normally like 30 frames or less, you know what I mean? It's like a quick, and nobody ever really notices it except for us super smart filmmakers. But yeah, this it's like a 1.5 minute take. It's a one-er, and I explained it to Kate because I the first time I watched it I forgot about this scene. So when it came up and it started, I'm like, that's interesting. And I really looked at it. I'm like, oh, it's just like what? I'm like, oh, it's they're playing it in reverse. She's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, you know, when he gets the book thrown at him, and then he tosses it up to the top of the bookshelf. When that played out originally, the bookshelf, or the book, was pushed off the bookshelf, and he caught it, and then he threw it to Peter Cushing. So when you play that backwards, it looks like Peter Cushing throws it to him, and then he throws it up. And yeah. She's like, oh, you know, she was interested. And it's, I agree with you. I probably haven't seen a film that has done it that extensively. All right. So I'm going to retract what I said earlier about it being a B+. I'll give it an A- for that scene alone.
Yeah, the scene is, I don't know, because I mean for directing it, and this was film, so this is not digital. Because the difference is in digital they can play it back right away, they can play it the way they want to and see if did everything work. Mm-hmm. With film, I don't know how many times they probably had to try this scene.
I imagine it was kind of like when we did the Wonder with our short a couple years ago, and we just practiced all day, and then they probably ran it like 5 times or 10 times, you know, whatever they wanted to do. It's hard for actors to work backwards because you're you see it a lot in action stuff too. So one of my favorite movies is Evil Dead 2. And in both Evil Dead movies, there's a scene where a girl gets, lack of a better term, gets raped by a tree. It's a horror movie. Don't sue me. But the way they filmed it is they started with the actress having, like, pieces of fake, you know, tree bark in her face and, like, up her shirt. And then the grips would just pull all the stuff and they would film it. And then when they played it back, it looked like the woods were alive and they were crawling up her arm. Like, that alone is hard to do because you have to think backwards. Again, this is a minute and a half.
And that's like a 10, 15 scene.
Of combined shots. You know? This is a oneer.
This is a oneer that's about 5 minutes long.
Yeah.
You know, and you have a bigger name actor in Peter Cushing that's part of this now too. That scene alone is worth watching this film. I know there are a lot of other little gags that are pretty funny, like the using the live cow.
the little horse one. I laughed more at that joke than I should have, but that was really good.
Yeah, they definitely have what today may be called dad jokes.
Yeah.
You know, kind of puns, mm-hmm. basically, good or bad. You know, and little horse refers to a little horse, or like your voice is a little. Horse.
Yeah, the horse was talking and it was coughing and stuff, and that's okay. He's a little horse. Ha ha!
It's funny, but so definitely check out the link. If you haven't seen it before, check out the link that is in the description. That is that scene. Hopefully it's the full scene, if the magic of YouTube allows it. So what, any other thoughts? I know you said that, you know, this is one of your wife's favorites, so one of your favorite things is to watch it with her. I know when you and I were trying to figure out when we were going to do this, that was one of your considerations is, hey, I want to watch it with my wife. Any other thoughts that you have?
No, it's weird because I feel like I wanted, as much as this movie was good, I have more thoughts about Airplane and Police Squad and I have watched all their movies religiously, really, except this one. So I have some things to say about it, but I have not unlike Airplane, which probably in college I watched, you know, 30 times, I can talk about that movie all day. I could probably quote half of it. So,
yeah. Yeah, I would agree that this is a less watched film.
Underappreciated.
Yep, and this was their
third
film. Because they had Kentucky Fried Movie, Airplane, and then they had Top Secret.
Yeah, but Kentucky Fried Movie...
It was a film, it was a theatrical release.
Yeah, but Airplane was their dip in the big pool.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, from Airplane, they're able to do the TV show Police Squad, which later led to the Naked Gun movies. But yeah, they don't have an extensive list of films that they've done, but the ones that they have done are all very.
They're not M. Night Shyamalan-ing it. Like
they're not maximizing.
They're pretty consistent.
They're definitely not maximizing their, trying to make as much money as possible. They are doing what they can to make the films that they want, mm-hmm. And tell the stories that they want, and they definitely get into other films. I think Jerry Zucker. He directed non-comedies like Ghost, mm-hmm. Which, you know, is kind of a surprise like for some people. Or Ruthless People was another film of the 80s that he directed. But when they get together, there's usually magic when those three guys get together.
Yeah, basketball.
So that's Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Yeah, but they didn't write it.
That's true. All right, so that was our number 82. So we're getting pretty much out of the 80s now. We're down to 81 for our next film. The next one we're going to do. This one is from 1998. It's another brother pair of directors.
Farrelly.
Yeah, the Farrelly brothers. There's Something About Mary. So this is the movie, Ben Stiller, Cameron Diaz.
Dumb and Dumber was better, but.
Matt Dillon. This is the one that kind of made them, though. This is the one that put them over the top.
I know. This is the cum in the hair. This was Brett Favre making a cameo.
Oh, spoiler alert.
Oh, sorry. Ben Stiller puts cum, or no, what's her face puts cum in her hair. It's a joke. She puts
it's okay.
Sticks it up.
It's okay. We can talk about it when the film comes.
It's like all people ever remembered about that movie was the cum in the hair, but they don't say it. Like I've said it about five times.
Yeah, I know you have.
Cum in the hair.
I'm guessing that's what you remember about the film.
I remember the scrotum zipper, but yeah.
I remember the songs.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the songs, the
1998 songs.
Yep. There's Something About Mary. Yeah, I always thought that was interesting. So we'll get into that film. So if you'd like to watch and review with us, There's Something About Mary, which probably I don't know if it's available anywhere right now for free.
Let's see.
I kind of doubt it. I'm guessing that it's a rental.
Probably most of the stuff we've watched have been rentals.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much $3.99 on every streaming service.
Yeah, but it's the Farrelly brothers and they do a very good job. And we'll talk about them in more detail, obviously next week. I believe this is the only film of theirs that we have. On our list.
What? No Me, Myself, and Irene?
No.
No Stuck on You?
No.
No Shallow Hal?
No. No The Ringer?
Mm.
No The Three Stooges?
Dumb and Dumber should have been on there, I'm telling you.
No Hall Pass. So.
Well,
so yeah,
I've had a delightful evening with you.
You know what I've had? I've also had a delightful evening.
Thank you. I was going to say syphilis, but I didn't want to assume.
No. Thank you, ointment. You know what else? Lord loves a working man. Don't trust Whitey. See a doctor and get rid of it. Thank you, everybody. We've had a wonderful time, as always.
The Filmological Society is a production of Redacted Media in association with Ghost Hat Media. For more information, find us on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, or visit us at www.ghosthat.net. We'll be right back.